Now stay tuned for Straight Talk, the show where social justice meets criminal law. Brought to you on WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville, by Tucker Griffin Barnes. Now here's your host, Andre Hayes.
Good morning, Charlottesville. You are listening to Straight Talk on WPVC-FM, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. Straight Talk is a series of interviews and conversations about legal and social justice issues affecting our community. I am your host, Andre Hakes. On today's show, we will be talking with Joy Johnson, who is president of the Public Housing Association of Residents in Charlottesville. And we're going to be talking about Crescent Halls and what's going on in public housing in the city these days. Hi, Joy.
Hi, good morning.
Thank you for coming to be on the show today.
You're quite welcome.
So tell me a little bit about, this whole show, this particular episode got started because there's some fervor going on right now in the community over Crescent Halls. Sorry, I keep saying hills.
That's okay.
It's not really even on a hill. So tell me a little bit about... first, explain what FAR is and what your role is there.
FAR is a citywide resident association, which is mandated through the regulations of Congress, through HUD, that we have the right to organize and we have the right to sit at the table with the housing authority helping to build a safe neighborhood in
now,
all aspect of it.
When you say we... You mean residents of public housing.
Exactly.
Of which you are one.
Of which I am.
And so, therefore, we.
We.
I see. So, we the people who live in these places.
That's right.
Have the ability to organize.
Right.
And that's statutory.
And that's statutory.
And so, FAR, P-H-A-R, is the organization that has been created by the residents.
Right. And FAR, has residents from... most of the sites, and then we appoint people to mm-hmm. represent the site.
And when you say most of the sites, how many public housing sites are there in Charlottesville?
There are 376 public housing sites, and then we have 7 sites and 5 single-family homes.
When you say 376, do you mean units?
Units.
In terms of, household units, an apartment or
exactly.
a house or...
Exactly, including Crescent Hall, which has 105 units.
Right, and so there are, you said, how many buildings that are multi-use... 7?
We have 7 locations.
Okay, and Crescent Hall is one of those.
One of the locations.
And Crescent Hall is basically a big apartment building.
It is a units for elderly and disabled people.
Okay, and that building is located down near the Ix Art Park.
Yes.
Kind of across from...
500 South First Street.
Across from, downtown ACAC in that area.
Exactly, the glass building. Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, so what's going on right now at Crescent Halls?
So what happened about a month ago or about a month ago, I would say, give and take, the air conditioning system in the hallways has stopped working.
Okay.
There were some units where the air wasn't circulating properly or it wasn't working.
Mm-hmm.
And those units, as long as people call in to the maintenance office or to the FAR office, they fix those mm-hmm. Right on the spot.
Okay.
Because the air in the hallway is not flowing like it is,
mm-hmm.
And I think it has some kind of connection with how the air flows in the apartment,
mm-hmm.
you may have air in one room in people's unit, but you might not have it in the kitchen, or you might not have it in the living room.
Okay.
So there, it wasn't that it was totally no air conditioning. It's just that in some places there wasn't sufficient cooling.
Now, is there a central AC unit in Crescent Halls?
There is a central, yes.
And how old is that building?
I would say as old as the building was created.
Sometime in the 70s, maybe?
Sometime in the 70s, maybe, a give and take. I don't have my stuff.
You don't have your cheat sheet in front of you.
I don't have my cheat sheet.
Okay.
With me,
but
it was one of the. West Haven was the first public housing,
mm-hmm.
and then Crescent Halls was the second.
Okay. So the AC unit in the building
uh-huh.
It's a central AC for the whole apartment building.
Yes.
And if I'm remembering correctly, there's 100. Plus
105 units.
Plus whatever community spaces there are. Hallways,
yeah,
elevators, lounges.
Right. There is a community center. There's a family room. There's a clinic.
So do the...
There's a boiler room. There's the office.
Does the air conditioning for the individual units, does it come from the same place, the same system that the air conditioning in the public spaces comes from?
I am not sure because I'm not the engineer of that.
Okay.
But I would say that it probably does. And there might be a connection to what goes in the hallway. Mm-hmm. I'm not exactly sure about that. That's a question for the housing authority. But what we do know is that the hallways wasn't as comfortable as it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And that was about 4 weeks ago. Housing authority was made aware of it. And they ordered the parts, and it's a special part that has to be made. And so they said that it will be 4 weeks. When it became public to the community that the hallways were still hot and they need some assistance, that was into the second week. Last week was the third week. Now we're going into the fourth week for the parts to come in. So was aware of it. We was working on it. The solution was that we needed something else to help with the flow in the hallways and in some of the apartments.
Now, I had heard that the entire building was without AC and that the units had no AC.
That is incorrect.
Not true. Okay. I had also heard that this had been going on for months, like 3 or 4 months.
Individual units have been going on for months, and as once they call it in, because when anything is broken in your unit, you're supposed to call it in. And when they were called in, based on what I've heard and know, is that they would fix those.
Okay.
Some, I think when the hallway unit thing broke down, then the filtration.
The airflow.
The airflow wasn't working like it was supposed to. So therefore, some parts of a unit might have air conditioning. It's just not flowing. And then others didn't. But there wasn't any unit that totally didn't have any air conditioning.
Okay. I had also heard that the compressor in this air conditioning system had frozen up and that there was condensation and there was water damage.
Well, that was going on. That's been going on for at least 10 years where we've been hearing concerns, and FAR has been saying, you know, we need to do something about this because some people have mold in their unit because of, you know,
condensation.
Yeah, right, or whatever. So this has been like a 10-year problem that has, over the years, they've been just like putting Band-Aids on it.
Okay.
However, only thing that we can do is to say to the board, these are the things that are happening, but it's the housing authority that has to fix that. And so this is why they were talking about redevelopment.
Now, when you say the housing authority, you're talking about Charlottesville Redevelopment and Housing Authority.
That is correct.
Now, tell me about that organization. Who makes it up? How do you end up on the housing board?
Okay, so the CRHA board, HUD mandate that you have to have a board. And our board in the city of Charlottesville is made up of seven board members. You have two current public housing that sits on the board, and the rest is private citizens. You can apply, and city council appoints you.
Is that board paid, or is it a volunteer board?
It's a volunteer board.
Okay, so we got seven people on a volunteer board that run the housing authority.
Exactly.
All right, and two of those people...
Who oversees the housing authority. The executive director runs the housing authority.
In other words, there's a board of seven people that manages a paid staff.
Exactly.
Okay, and that board of seven people, two of them are residents of public housing?
Yes.
Okay. And the other five are
private citizens.
People who live in Charlottesville.
Right.
Okay. And how do all seven of those people get appointed by city council?
Correct.
Okay. So there are seven people that are appointed by city council. City council is elected by the voters.
Right. Correct.
And those seven people are given the unpaid task of managing a staff that is paid to deal with whatever's going on in public housing. And by deal with, what I mean here is if the air conditioning breaks, the board supervises a staff of people whose job it is to go fix the air conditioning.
Right.
Okay. So tell me, how many people are on the paid staff?
I am not sure how many staff people they have. I know that they have the executive director, they have a finance director, they have a bookkeeper, they have asset managers, they have a maintenance staff.
Mm-hmm. Well, it seems like the maintenance staff is where the rubber meets the road here.
Well, yes.
So what's going on with that? Is the I guess the problem is, from my understanding, the system is so old that the parts weren't available to fix it quickly.
Exactly.
And so parts have to be fabricated.
Exactly.
But this is fourth week, not fourth month.
Exactly.
Okay. And the parts are coming.
That's what we were told.
All right. Well, who told you that?
From the Housing Authority.
Okay, that's what CRHA said.
Who has been in touch with the people who makes the parts.
Okay.
So the chair of the board, which is Julie Jones, has been aware and been vigilant mm-hmm. on trying to make absolutely sure that our seniors and our disabled people are being taken care of.
Because that particular building, Crescent Halls, is mostly elderly and disabled folks.
It's mostly elderly and disabled folk, exactly.
Which, for them, having your air conditioning out might be a much more significant problem than for young
right.
people.
But it's not the units. I want to focus. The units, I don't want people to say, oh, she's lying. Some of the units were comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
There may be the kitchen, or it may be the living room, or it may be the bedroom where there isn't some air circulating in there, but there were air circulating in some parts of it.
Okay, so in every unit, there is a place in the unit that is a comfortable temperature, although it may not be comfortable all over the
exactly.
unit.
Exactly. It's not what they're used to.
Okay.
Exactly.
I understand. Is the air conditioning the only problem going on in that building?
No, there's other problems in our public housing. It's old stock.
Well, let's talk about
aging stock.
Crescent Hall
specifically. Can I go back to finishing the question about the board?
Sure.
So the board is appointed by city council, and their charge is to make absolutely sure that they're in compliance with whatever HUD regulations are.
Mm-hmm.
And HUD wants to make sure that they're spending the money right, they're not misspending the money, that they're providing safe and decent units for folks.
Now, HUD is the Federal Department of Housing and Urban Development.
Exactly.
And so that's a federal entity. We don't have a HUD office in Charlottesville, do we?
No, our field office is in Richmond, and our field office is Ms. Catherine Lamberg.
Okay. And here's my understanding of how that works. In these public housing units,
mm-hmm.
there might be a part of the payment. The Housing Authority owns the buildings. They own the land the buildings are on.
Right.
And the Housing Authority collects rents from the units. They're not free.
30% of your gross.
No.
30% of your gross annual income. And there is this myth out there that public housing residents are lazy and they don't work.
Mm-hmm.
Grant you, they may be at the bottom of the scale of income.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? But they work.
Well, and if you're old enough, or if you're severely disabled, I imagine that would be sort of limited employment opportunities available to you.
And there is a process that you have to go to be eligible.
Mm-hmm.
First, you have to be eligible for public housing.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you're eligible, then you have to get your income. And because even people who are disabled have some income from disability.
Right.
Right?
Okay.
Because that's how your rent is going to be based.
Sure. And so that disability income, part of that is paid over to the Housing Authority.
Exactly. 30% of your gross annual income.
Okay.
Total. That means if you have six persons in the household working, it's 30% of that.
That total income.
income in that unit.
That makes sense. And HUD, Housing and Urban Development, has federal funding, and they pay some federal funding to the Housing Authority.
They give a subsidy to the Housing Authority, yes.
Okay, so the Housing Authority's budget is made up of the rents from the residents and the federal funding.
Exactly.
What are those proportions? Do you have any idea how much is federal funding and how much is the rents?
Well, sometimes if they have to go through a... they have to go through some kind of evaluation with HUD. It's called a REAC inspection. Mm-hmm. And they come and they inspect. They look at how they're managing their money. They look at what shape the units are in. They mm-hmm. look at how the curve appeal is. And they lose points.
Mm-hmm.
And they also, they look at also occupancy rates. How many units are vacant or how many units are filled.
Mm-hmm.
And based on that, there is a subsidy that they get. And so sometimes the Housing Authority, when they weren't doing badly one year, they got only 65% of the subsidy.
Mm-hmm.
But I know up now they're getting about 90%, 98% of the subsidy.
Well, if the Housing Authority is having trouble, if they've got a problem over there, then why should they get less money from HUD? You'd think they'd need more money because they need to fix the problem.
Because Congress has changed, and I think the bigger conversation for this community is about how HUD, Congress has decided that they want to move away from public housing and move to private housing.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, what I have learned over the years is that the appropriation committee for the money that comes to public housing is attached to the veteran bills. Well,
say that again.
The appropriation money, right?
Uh-huh.
When they go in Congress and they have to appropriate how much go to the veterans and how much go to public housing or whatever. Some of those things are tied together.
Okay.
And so public housing doesn't get as much advocacy as the veterans does.
Okay.
And who want to go up against the veterans?
Right.
So every year there is a decrease in funding that goes to public housing.
Okay.
And so there is a movement that public housing needs to become private. And so... they've been working, so they're giving less money in capital. So the Housing Authority get capital funds to help fix the place,
right?
And they get a subsidy. So there's two pots of money they get from HUD.
Okay.
However, they're shrinking. Every year they shrink.
Okay.
Every year the amount...
every year the building gets older. Every year the Housing Authority gets less money.
Every year, then folks need to be calling, you know, their congressmen and their senators and all to put pressure on them to put more money or to give more money to help out. Because when they cut that budget, the Housing Authority have less to work with.
Mm-hmm. It's my understanding that, you know, these buildings not only have moisture and mold problems, and not only are we having this air conditioning problem now, which is acute, but we've had air conditioning problems over the past 10 years, we also have a bed bug problem in the public housing.
And the bed bug, and based on what I've known about the bed bug problem, it was worse when our past executive director was here
mm-hmm.
and before, but they've been on it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there is, because... there needs to be better education to people about when they get secondhand furniture
mm-hmm.
and keeping their apartments clean.
Right.
Right. And keeping a whole lot of other stuff, you know. So it's not just the Housing Authority fault about the bed bugs.
Okay.
But when there is, it is mandated by HUD
right.
that they have to take care of it.
It sounds like
can't charge the residents.
HUD says, Housing Authority, you have all these things that you have to do. And then the HUD gives Housing Authority less money every year.
Mm-hmm.
But their requirements for what they have to do stay the same.
Yeah. That's basically it.
I gotcha.
That's basically it. And so, you know, if the city doesn't help, if we don't find grant fundings, if we don't redevelop, you know, eventually all public housing is going to be private.
Well, when you say all public housing is going to be private, what are you talking about? What do you mean?
They basically want them to become not getting any subsidy from HUD or getting subsidy from HUD, but a different funding stream,
well,
which is called Section 8 base.
That's also federal funding.
That's also federal.
So we're just talking about shifting from one federal entity to another.
Exactly.
What difference
exactly.
is it going to make?
Well, that's something you got to ask them good old boys and girls in Congress.
All right. So I don't understand why Section 8 is private and HUD
Section
is public.
Section 8 is not private.
Okay.
Section 8 is also a subsidy.
All right. So what do you mean when you say the housing is going to become private?
That
these buildings are
not
owned
getting,
by a public
that
entity.
Is not getting. I don't know much clearer I can make it, but it's that it won't be getting the funding stream from. It is mandated right now through HUD
right.
that this has to happen for public housing.
Right.
If it become private, most of that goes away.
In other words, you think maybe the housing units will get so bad that they'll get condemned, maybe, and
no,
then people will live in private housing.
No.
No. Okay,
no.
Well, tell me
they
how
have,
we get to
they
private
have to,
housing.
I don't know how to convey it to you the way that I understand it, but the way that they fund public housing will no longer be the way that they fund public housing. But they will fund... They would give subsidy through another entity, which is
maybe they will transfer ownership of the public housing buildings to private entities in sort of the way we've established private prisons.
The housing authority will still own. They have to bring in. They have to redevelop so that they can bring in tax credit. So they can bring in fair market housing or whatever, so it'd be a mixed community. So, no, there will still be public housing. We have a residence bill of rights that said we want 376 public housing to still remain as affordable housing because there is a house affordable housing crisis in the city of Charlottesville.
All right, we need to take a break for just a minute. We'll be right back with Straight Talk. Welcome back to Straight Talk with Andre Hakes. Today, my guest is Joy Johnson. We're talking about public housing. Joy Johnson is the president of FAR. Specifically, we're talking about the situation at Crescent Halls in Charlottesville. At this point, I want to introduce another voice into the conversation, Matt Murphy. Matt Murphy's a Charlottesville resident. Say hello, Matt.
Hey, how you guys doing today?
Thank you for coming in today and helping us out here.
Sure.
You and I were having lunch yesterday, and we were talking a little bit about the history of public housing in Charlottesville.
Mm-hmm.
And my recollection is this all, you know, this goes back to a time when in the 60s there was Vinegar Hill was a neighborhood that was all sort of owned by mostly African-American families, and it had its own businesses and it had its own private homes. And at some point that neighborhood was raised. Do you know anything about that? Is there any?
I mean, I just know what I've read. I'm sure Ms. Johnson has, you know, firsthand history and interaction with Vinegar Hill. So, but yeah, I think those that have spent some time and care about what happens in Charlottesville, you know, should have at least some awareness of it. If you haven't read up on the story, by all means, I certainly encourage you to and talk to people that live there. It's fascinating. It's heartbreaking. It's eye-opening.
Well, talk a little bit about it. Tell me what you know about that, about what happened historically.
Well, I mean, again, I've lived here 5 years, so this has just come from what I've read and you know, heard from folks. And Ms. Johnson, by all means, you know, correct me where I may have mistaken something. But, you know, that community was indeed raised for... I think purposes that weren't necessarily super clear when the place was torn down. And then it sat kind of just empty and vacant for a long time. And that's really kind of an open wound for a community. There's actually really a fascinating book that I read several years ago called Root Shock.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, they studied about five cities. It's by a lady by the name of Dr. Mindy Fullerlove. And they studied Richmond, California. They studied Roanoke, Virginia, and a couple other cities. Charlottesville was not in the book, but she talked about the psychological effect that is had on a community that is forced to move across town into housing that some may consider better, or the residents may consider worse than what they had before. But a community not their own, and to see that place that had value to them no longer be there, it's an open and ongoing sore. As we can see, the Vinegar Hill issue is here in Charlottesville.
Well, Joy, you're nodding your head. Tell me a little bit about what you know about this.
Well, I wasn't here during the course of Vinegar Hill because I'm from the islands, mm-hmm. Kingston, Jamaica, Usain Bolt. But anyway, I had to give a shout out to that.
Yeah.
But anyway, based on what I have learned since I've gotten here, Mr. Murphy is right, is that there is still an open wound based on Vinegar Hill, because at that time, the African-American community was very vibrant. Was very vibrant. It had its own business, but most of all, it was people's home.
Right.
And when cold, I see all of, and I know this is a short program, but.
No, keep going.
But
this is interesting.
You got to understand about code. The city changed the code.
The building code?
The building code.
Uh-huh.
Which meant that they, people were going to lose their home.
So in other words, there were houses that were code compliant when they were built.
Right.
And then the code was changed so that suddenly a whole neighborhood of houses didn't comply with the building
code. Exactly. And it's happening now. There's this thing going on about changing the codes. There's a study going on about changing the codes. I don't know if you know about it. There are people are meeting and whatever about it. We haven't been involved, but we're going to get involved because uh-huh. It's going to affect redevelopment.
Okay.
So when the code is the most important things of what you get built back in your neighborhood,
right.
You know,
but the houses are grandfathered in to building code changes. If the code changes and my house is already built, my house doesn't get knocked down. Are you saying that's what happened here?
Yeah. Yeah. Based on what pretty much.
So basically they didn't grandfather in the houses.
No,
do you think they changed the code in order to knock down this neighborhood?
Well, it was a blighted neighborhood.
What do you mean?
They basically said it was an ugly neighborhood, just like they're saying public housing is a blighted neighborhood now.
Okay.
So, you know, for me, it's about, gentrification.
Mm-hmm.
It's about removal of a certain class.
Mm-hmm. Was it because the land where the houses were was something that other people wanted? People with more assets?
Nothing's really changed.
Nothing's changed.
And so,
it's just a different flavor.
Right.
So basically, Vinegar Hill and when I say Vinegar Hill, what I have in mind is where the new hotel is built, like near the Sacagawea statue. Is that Vinegar Hill?
It's much bigger than that.
Where was Vinegar Hill?
It's where the Omni Hotel is.
Mm-hmm.
It's where McDonald's is.
Mm-hmm.
It's where the Vinegar Hill Theater is.
Mm-hmm.
It's all the way back down to where Garrett Square is and 6th Street. It's big.
Okay, so it was a pretty large area.
It was a big, very, up even on West Main Street, it was big.
Mm-hmm.
And so you had, it was a big area, and some areas sat for 15 years before they built on it. So when they decided to move to build West Haven, and it started back in the 50s.
Okay.
You know, there was a referendum so many times that got voted up, voted down. City referendum, state mm-hmm. referendum that got voted up, voted down.
Uh-huh.
And finally they decide that they were going to build two public housing, one for whites, one for black. One was going to be on Cherry Avenue.
Are you kidding me?
No, I'm not kidding you. And then finally,
well, I guess this
in
was the
1950s,
50s, okay.
Right. Now in the 1950s, they decided that, okay, we will build one. But they still didn't know where they wanted to build it. And so an African-American man named Mr. West decided to donate the land because he was very influential. And he donated the land for mm-hmm. West Haven.
Okay.
And Hardy Drive came because of the pastor of Mount Zion First African Baptist
mm-hmm.
Church.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how you have West Haven.
That's a church on Main Street.
Right. Mr. West donated the land, and then the pastor who was involved some kind of way,
uh-huh.
it's named Hardy Drive. So there are some historical things that are going on that people is not aware of.
Well, now, in Peter Hill, go ahead.
What I was just going to say, and I appreciate and value that history. My question then becomes, where do we go from here? Because it's just the continued pattern of what we've already seen. So the conversation becomes frustrating at times, at least when it comes to, when I'm talking to folks, to continually reference Vinegar Hill. Yes, it's a starting point, but you see the pattern continuing into West Haven and into what could be happening now, where I feel like, it's very difficult, as you talked about a little bit earlier, it's very difficult to find affordable housing in the city of Charlottesville. And then you start talking to people that are actually building houses in the city of Charlottesville and how extremely difficult it is for them to be able to do that at a, in a, for a reasonable amount.
Well, I'm interested in this change, right? Because what you're describing in Vinegar Hill is a neighborhood in which individual families owned their homes. Mm-hmm. And their homes might be considered blighted by
but
some.
It was
they might be substandard, but they owned it. They owned the land underneath it. They owned the building, right?
Exactly.
And then we moved over to this place where we have public housing projects that the people don't own.
Now, all of the buildings wasn't owned, but You had a mixed community. You have homeowners and you had rentals.
Okay.
And so now, you know, in public housing, you know, and I'm just going to say what Joy Johnson feels because that's just how I feel as an organizer.
Well, that's why Joy Johnson is on the radio.
Well, you know, I'm wearing a hat from far, and sometimes when you're representing your organization, you have to just watch what you say. But I ain't wearing that hat right now.
All right, take it off,
the
Joy.
The city of Charlottesville needs to be honest about who they want to live in their city. Mm-hmm. And the way we feel is that there is this movement to get poor people out of this city.
Well,
and when I say poor people, you have to be making $60,000 and above in order to live in the city of Charlottesville.
Mm-hmm.
If you're making $50,000, $40,000, $30,000, whatever, most of folks are going outside of Charlottesville to find somewhere to live. People are saying that, you know, police officers and nurses and doctors can't find housing in the city of Charlottesville. Well, people who are serving your mamas and your husband and, you know, cleaning... Mm-hmm. serving you coffee and cleaning your floors and all, they can't find housing in the city of Charlottesville, too.
Well, and it used to be that we had this idea that there was flight to the suburbs. And the phrase that comes to mind is white flight.
They're flighting back to the city.
And now they want
poor people to flight somewhere else.
Yeah, so now those city properties have become more valuable.
Very valuable.
The trend is for people to want to live in the urban centers.
Exactly.
And so now we're forcing people who
are in poverty out into the county. Right.
And you force them out to the suburban ring.
Right, you force them out there. And then the challenge becomes transportation. How do they get to these jobs that are paying enough money for them to survive? Because, you know, the jobs on the bus line perhaps are paying, you know, $7, $8, $9 an hour. You're not going to live in Charlottesville for that much. It's hardly anywhere you can really live for that much. So, you know, you start talking about having to have two jobs, and now you're talking about childcare issues, and it's a spiraling, kind of spirals out of control when services and, you know, some of the basic things that you are able to access if you have a vehicle are not available to you because you've been forced to move further out.
Well, so we have these buildings like Crescent Hall, and they are deteriorating because the funding isn't there to keep them up and manage them appropriately, and because they're getting old. And so what's the practical effect of this? I mean, if the residents complain loudly enough about their housing, won't the housing end up getting condemned? And then won't they all end up homeless?
So public housing will never get condemned because HUD still oversees. Even though they give a little bit of money, there are certain things that HUD still oversee and check into to make sure it's happening. They might not be up to where we want them, but they're still going to get their subsidy in a way. What I do want to say is that's why we are looking at, my hat is back on that one.
Okay, whoop, there it goes.
Now,
is that a fedora?
That's why the positive vision about redevelopment is happening. That's why we have decided that, you know, we have to have a plan of how we redevelop and how we make sure people are not being shipped out.
Now, when you say redevelopment, what I hear is knock it down and build something new. Is that what you mean?
I would rather see them rehab, but the fact of the matter is that's not going to happen because of coding.
Because the buildings are now so far below building code.
And plus, there is not enough land in the city of Charlottesville to build. And based on what I've heard Kathy Galvin said, city council, is that we are not using our, we're not using up the space as much as the density. Mm-hmm. So it's all about density because mm-hmm. we don't have enough land. So we need to use more and serve more. And
well, it would be hard to be more dense than an apartment building like Crescent Hall. I mean, that's a dense...
Oh, have you been on Wetland Street to see some of the dense thing that's on Wetland?
No, I haven't seen anything dense on Wetland.
Maybe you need to take a tour.
What's going on Wetland?
Well, on Wetland Street, there are tons of buildings built behind buildings up there.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think people need to just start coming in the neighborhood and looking at the neighborhood and seeing the neighborhood and understanding. But you have people who don't really understand what's going on and just say, oh, they're just, you know, just tear it down, just move, just get them out, just move them out.
Joyce, can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Do you feel like in this conversation of redevelopment and gentrification, all these things, are poor people being heard?
No. I don't think so. I think people hear our noise, but they're not hearing us. There is a difference that when I'm talking to you, that you hear me, but there is also a difference when you hear me, it changes the mindset and it changes the heart mm-hmm. to let you do something totally different.
What would you suggest? What do you think would be the best way to deal with the deteriorating conditions at a place like Crescent Hall? I heard you say you'd like to see things rehabbed. Do you want to see that building continue to exist where it is? Or
I when I served on the Housing Authority Board for 9 years, I never supported Crescent Hall's being rehabbed. I supported that Crescent Hall should be torn down and made 3 stories, I think 8-story building for elderly and disabled people is asking for tragedy.
Okay.
I feel like it should be torn down and it should be made 3 levels where it's more accessible for people to get down the stairs and if there is something else.
Mm-hmm.
Just much easier and it's much nicer, I think.
But would that make it less people that could live there, though?
Well, the Housing Authority has 3 unoccupied lands.
It does?
Yes.
Where are they?
Levy Avenue and 2 on South First Street.
And how big are they?
I'm not sure how big they are, but they can start billing on those.
Well, are they, we talking about a lot, like a residential house, or are we talking about a piece of property as big as an apartment complex?
It's probably not as big as West Haven, but it is big enough to build several units on it. Mm-hmm. And Levy Avenue is big also. So there are things in redevelopment that has been talked about before. And there are things that are in some plans that are good, but not so good for a lot of reasons. And some of those things can, you know, but they need money. You need investors. But we need investors who have a heart for Charlottesville low-income residents.
Well, investors want to make a profit. I mean, that's
exactly
what investors do.
I know, but you do have some investors that it can be done. It was done in Greensville, South Carolina.
Well, how do you make a profit off of low-income housing?
I don't know that question. I don't know that answer. I don't know that answer, but I know that it has to be about the people.
I mean, where we've seen privatization come in and make a profit is in the prison system, and look how well that's turned out.
True.
I mean, that's a nightmare. Mm-hmm. So I don't know that that's really a good answer.
Well,
now, maybe there isn't a good answer. I mean, I'm not sitting here going, here, let me tell you how I think we should do it. I'm just saying, woo, that's sounds a little...
I think we have to find someone who is willing, you know, have the heart to, you know, to build something good and different, but it's not all about the money. And I don't know who that person is yet.
Wow. Well, we're going to take a break on that note while we try to think of who that person is, and we'll be back in just a few minutes. So we are back on the air with Straight Talk. I'm Andre Hakes. My guest today, I have 2 guests. My guest, primary guest is Joy Johnson, who's president of FAR, the Public Housing Association of Residents in Charlottesville. And my other guest today is Matt Murphy, who's a Charlottesville resident. And we're talking about public housing, and we're specifically talking about the problem presented by aging buildings. And in particular, the hot topic at the moment is Crescent Halls, which is a 105-unit apartment building that houses mostly elderly and disabled people who which is subsidized by Housing and Urban Development, federal funding, and managed through the Housing Authority here in Charlottesville. So we were talking before the break about, you know, what might happen as alternatives to this building, right? That you could rehab the building, you could knock the building down and build something else. Joy was saying, you know, maybe we could knock that 8-story building down and build a 3-story building, but then what would we do with the other people? You know, we have some other properties that the city owns, or we might be able to build something else. Funding is always an issue, and I don't know that we're going to solve that this morning. But let's talk for a second about, you know, it strikes me that we had a neighborhood in Vinegar Hill. Now we have public housing neighborhoods, but they're owned by a public entity. And we're talking about moving into privatization. And when privatization, one of the buzzwords I hear is mixed income, mixed income housing. Let's talk about that. I mean, privatization, the way I was thinking about it before the break was, you know, like the prison system. So now this, you know, now no longer will this elected body who is somewhat responsible to the voters on some level manage this. Now we'll give it to this private entity who will try to turn a profit out of it. But there's this other idea of mixed income housing. Can one of you speak to that and what that means and what the vision is there?
Well, the only thing I can say is that based on what I've understand about the redevelopment plans for the Housing Authority and having mixed income is the Housing Authority would still own the land, right? And they still have a say-so of what goes back on the site. However, in order to get some revenue in, right, they still would have to have some kind of mix of income, home ownership, market rate housing, and public housing.
Okay.
And so that is supposed to generate some kind of income coming in, tax credits also.
You mean like individuals who are not low income would buy a house in a neighborhood full of houses that also housed public housing?
Well, that's what,
correct.
Yeah. Correct.
But that wouldn't work in an apartment building situation, right?
It could. In a condo kind of
And those are the kind of dynamics of designs and what goes where that needs to be spelled out in the whole planning. Relocation, HUD mandates that if you move people from one unit to another, you have to have a relocation plan. The relocation plan would drive what get bills first.
I don't understand. Can you flesh that out a little bit, Joy?
So the federal governments have a regulation that says, If you're redevelopment and if you have to relocate people because of no cause of their own,
right,
then there are things that must be done. What those things are, I'm not...
Like if we have to knock Crescent Hall down,
then you would have
and
to
we have
move,
to relocate everybody.
You have to pay, they would have to, you know, help pay for their relocation, and they have to be back at a certain time. So they give you a specific time of... You know, I think it's a year or no more than a year where they will have to be relocated. Now, the person has a choice. The resident will have a choice that if they relocate them over here to the right and they like it, then they can refuse going back.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a plan that has to happen, and the plan would drive what get built first.
Well, how many people live in Crescent Hall? So 105 units.
It's 105 units. I'm not sure.
Let's say there's 150 people there, maybe. I think that's somewhere in that ballpark.
Okay.
What do you do with those people?
They would have to have a relocation plan of where they're going to put the people.
Okay.
In order for them to redevelop.
I understand, but what do you do with them saying we have to have a plan for what we're going to do with them? Doesn't answer the question. I mean, what is a feasible plan? Do you have any idea what?
A feasible plan is you either have a contract, you either buy properties that is already built, that is sitting empty, and put them in it, and or you build.
Right.
Well, and then you start thinking about things that they've done, and this is in many ways apples to oranges, but you see what happened in Chicago with Cabrini Green as they tore that down. Of course, that was in phases.
Tell me about that.
Part of that was moving people out. You know, it was getting them out of the city. That right. That was part
and
of the plan.
What they did then is give them vouchers, those mm-hmm. private vouchers, to go, and they didn't keep track of them. One of the things that we're not asking, it's called relocation vouchers, mm-hmm. but I'll let you finish.
Well, no, and so some of these people were given, they were given relocation vouchers, and moving further away from this neighborhood that, you know, private investors had come in and began to buy up to mm-hmm. make money with, mm-hmm. Those people could never afford to come back there anyway.
Right.
So the intent was to move them out. So when we start talking about mixed income housing, in my opinion, and I'm a bit of a skeptic, so I will admit that. Mixed income housing to me is just one step in the process of total gentrification.
So we're going to call it mixed income housing initially.
For a little while.
We're going to move everybody out of there, and then we're going to build a lot of fancy stuff that costs a lot of money, and then rich people
so
are going to come by.
So the affordability thing comes right back to the affordability thing.
Well, and even for those that come back with, and it is genuinely mixed income housing, where you may have low income or subsidized housing in there, it's just a matter of years before new rules come about that will force fewer people, and it's less controversial at that point. Instead of mm-hmm. 150 people have to go, now we have, you know, 60 or 35, and it's a little more quiet. And, well, you know, they tried it, and it just didn't work out.
I see. You know. Well, that is kind of a cynical perspective.
I know. That's me.
but it has a certain ring of truth to it.
Yeah.
If you look historically at
historically,
what's happened.
Yes.
And the past is the best predictor of the future.
In many ways.
Well, exactly. What could you do to avoid that? I mean, you know, what other options are there here? We've got 150 people in a building that's fallen down around their ears. And at some point, it's my understanding that, you know, these buildings, having not had the funds expended on them over their lifespan, will reach a point of not really being able to be efficiently repaired. I had a pickup truck that I loved. I had a 72 pickup truck, and it was my baby, and things kept breaking, and I kept fixing, and, you know, I was jerry-rigging the thing. I was holding it together with duct tape and baling wire, and at some point I put a floor pan in it that came from a washing machine that was in the bed of the truck that I was hauling to the dump when I drove it to the garage. And the guy's like, are you using that? And I'm like, no. And he pop rivets it into it. But at some point you reach a point where there's nothing solid to pop rivet into anymore.
Right.
And so the truck had to go, right? I mean, I love my truck. I wish I still had my truck. But at this point it would be a planter, I think. So aren't we getting there, or aren't we approaching there with some of these public housing units that they can't be repaired? And if they can't be repaired, what are we going to do about it? How are we going to avoid this problem that you're talking about, Matt, where, you know, we sort of do this two-step gentrification project? Step one is the bait of, okay, well, we're going to build you this, you know, great mixed-use neighborhood, and step two is the switch where you don't get to come back.
Well, I think the city has to step up some.
Well, what does that mean?
If you look at what the city goal is to build affordable housing, it was 15%. I heard that they have reduced it. It is not for people below 60% of the AMI.
What?
60% of the
adjusted median income?
Adjusted median, right. So people who are making 40%,
mm-hmm.
30%, 20, and God forbid, 15, 12, 13, 10, mm-hmm. 9, 8, 7, 3, 2, 1, and 0,
mm-hmm.
nothing is being built. You can't afford it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that conversation has to happen. It can't be just you're just billing for one spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have people who are homeless, you have people who don't have any income, all the way up to people who is working, but they're not making 20%. They're not making $18,000 a year.
Right.
They're not making 19. They're not making 20. They're
right.
not making 40. They're not making 50.
Right.
They're not making 60. And even people who are making 60% at AMI can't find housing here.
Right. Well, that
so
goes back to...
There has to be a different mindset that we're not just looking at certain... They're billing them. God forbid, they're billing them. You know, did you see Main Street? They're billing them for students. They're billing them.
Right.
But we can't afford them.
Right. Well, the reason they're doing that is because they're private corporations exactly. putting these things up for profit. And that's where you make a profit. Right?
So
what do we do?
The city needs to change its mindset. And you know, I don't feel, I feel like, you know, that there are poor people is just not on, they say it,
mm-hmm.
you know, you have all these organizations, you know, I will give a shout out to Habitat.
Mm-hmm.
Habitat is doing a wonderful job in making sure that people who are below that AMI can afford to buy a house.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So somehow the city needs to help or do something similar to what
Habitat is doing. They're a private nonprofit. Yes,
they are.
I mean, they're not. They don't have any government influence, do they? And people don't appoint. The government doesn't appoint people to Habitat, do they?
I think they have a private board.
Right.
But they have people on that board who is committed
mm-hmm.
to serve all people.
Right. So you got a charity there that's actually doing a decent job.
Yeah, yeah.
And you'd like to see the government do some a little more like that.
I do. I mean, because, you know, when I went to Greensville, South Carolina, and I visited there, shout out to Charles Gardner. I don't know if he's listening, but he did a wonderful job. And Aubrey Watts. He was one of the biggest secret in the city of Charlottesville. He knew how to do it.
Yeah.
He's retired now, but Aubrey Watts know how to do good mixed income with affordable units there also. He's retired now, so he's gone. The planning department here needs to change. NSD needs to change. Because what I saw in Greensville, South Carolina, they were advocates for the neighborhood. I don't feel like this planning department are advocate for the neighborhoods and keeping the neighborhoods whole.
You're talking about the planning department in the city of Charlottesville?
In the city of Charlottesville.
Okay. And right. Those are governmental employees.
Exactly.
I see.
And they work on zoning, they work on preservation, they work on historics, whatever. So, you know, I just feel like that needs to change.
Well, who controls the planning department? Who supervises them?
Well, the city manager, Maurice Jones, does.
Okay. And is Maurice Jones elected, appointed? Hired by whom?
He's hired by the elected officials.
Which is city council?
City council.
So basically, it's sort of a matter of changing the goals, maybe?
It's changing their mindsets and their heart.
It's a culture change you're looking
yeah,
for.
Yeah, it's changing their mindset and changing their hearts.
Yeah, I got you. And I guess the issue then also is money. Where does the money come from to do it? I mean, ultimately, the taxpayers have to pay for whatever the government decides
to
do.
And the community, too. I'm not going to just beat up on city council because that's what they're going to say when they see me. But
right.
The community also has to change its mindset.
From what to what?
What do you mean?
To be able to, you know, I don't know how this goes, but Jeff Fogel was saying he was willing to pay more taxes in order to put more money into some revenue to help build with bonds. You know, mm-hmm. they have a rating, a bond rating that they have that they could use that. So, you know, I've heard him talk about it more. I haven't learned more about it, but it's like, oh, he got an idea, you know. And so I think there are different things that they can do. There are some people who are willing to do it, and there's some people who isn't willing.
Well, maybe it's kind of a zero-sum game. It's like you're saying, you know, nobody wants to compete with the veterans for funding, right? You got mm-hmm. HUD, you got the public housing funding and the veterans funding tied together. At some level, the tax picture in the city is all tied in. If you get more, somebody else gets less.
So I asked the community, so how are you going to help?
Right.
How are you going? You know, are you going to change your mindset? Do you think we should be living in the city? You know, I think the community can put much more pressure where it needs to be put to come up with a good and practical idea.
I gotcha. All right. Well, thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure having you, Joy.
Thank you for having me.
And it's been good to have you in this conversation, too, Matt.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. So I'm going to sign off for this week, and y'all have a good weekend.
This has been Straight Talk with your host, Andre Hayes, brought to you by Tucker Griffin Barnes. Production is from Olivia August, engineering, Mike Friend. Be sure and listen again next Saturday morning at 10 o'clock for Straight Talk on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.